Cell, Dido and Aeneas. My provenance is South London 60. My first act of civic vandalism wasn't quite like that of other boys. I shinned up a road sign that announced one's arrival in Bermondsey and crayoned it with the travel advisory of Dante's Inferno, Lasciate ogni speranza, abandon all hope. I had not read Dante, but had eagerly swallowed Hubert Selby Jr.'s Last Exit to Brooklyn. It wasn't a mindless act, but it was rather pointless. In Bermondsey we speak West Indian patois, Turkish, Amharic, and even a dialect of English, but Florentine is thin on the ground. The people of Bermondsey may already have suspected that they were living in purgatory, and possibly need not have been reminded of the fact by an alacritous 14-year-old. I'm of post-war working-class stock, and therefore designed to receive bad news. In what I like to think of as one of my more charming qualities, I continue to respond to disappointment as if it were an unusual aspect of life. My face is interesting to the degree that my mouth has not yet been disfigured into an inverted moo. That has been a triumph. On a daily basis, I have seen constant anticlimax turn other people's mouths inoperably upside down. I am a commercially unsuccessful singer, although I was an inner-city superstar of unwiped formica, enjoying a moderately lengthy run as the Ava Gardner of SE16. In 1983, the late and celebrated clairvoyant Doris Stokes, on one of her frequent sorties to the astral plane, presented to me as unassailable fact that I am related to the Spanish Armada. I accepted this information, nodding vigorously, which corroborates my instinctive flair for the staccato. I was relieved at not being buried in yet more Wigan. On planet Earth, my family tree is a rhombus of clogmakers and disinterested fish gutters from Lancashire who moved to London after the Second World War. Historically a docker's district, by the time I arrived on the stage, Bermondsey was already nosediving towards economic obsolescence amid a utopian experiment of social realism. With the advance of globalisation came the death of old industries, presaging an uncertain future where one's neighbours disappeared and where the streets in which one grew up became an increasingly volatile Hogarthian rust belt. The severity of this depression was such that a Stalinist energy measure was introduced whereby television broadcasting stopped abruptly at 9 o'clock in the evening to encourage the nation to go to bed. Mid-1970s London was really Moscow with John Lewis. I've always thought that energy was there to be wasted, a relentless flicker of light switches. To my parents' annoyance, I would pass from one room to another, illuminating the house in broad daylight, until one Thursday, and despite a clear warning, I plugged in a Hoover and was electrocuted. The shock threw me across a downstairs vestibule and into the bathroom. I never recovered. Electricity. I am at home, stationed by a tower of Marshall amplifiers. As trade swung away from Britain's Commonwealth and towards Europe, the ships that would glide up the Thames like regiments to London's Indian Keys dwindled to single spies before vanishing altogether. I remember these modern galleons sailing into Rotherhithe, carrying the cargo of rubber, bananas and timber. Consequently, as the cranes stood idle and the warehouses and wharves lay abandoned, the docks were transformed into a forbidden place of ghost shadows and folk memory. Immortalised in Charles Dickens' Oliver Twist, Rotherhithe docks offered an ideal location in which to be robbed, raped, or murdered.